You're listening to 1520 AM WCAG Westchester. Heard worldwide at WCAG1520.com.
Hey, in Wellington, New Zealand, we're listening to the Paranormal Cafe.
Dining with Rob, where strange meets unusual, at the Paranormal Cafe.
We're back here at the Paranormal Cafe, welcoming you back to the airwaves. What an interview with that guy. I love having that guy on. He was a bang-up, knock-it-out-of-the-park kind of guy. Whew. You want to go to his website, openyoureyestotwentytwelveandbeyond.com. Drew Maris. You want to give me a call at 610-701-WCHE, 610-701-9243. We'll get you on the air straight here on the Paranormal Cafe. And we have a call up on line one. Welcome to the Paranormal Cafe.
Pete from Newark calling back.
Pete, how goes it, sir?
Great, man. I'm going to tell you something. I'm glad nobody called in and screwed up that energy for you. Because that was a great interview, man. You guys touched on everything. I mean, he was basically, obviously, he's trying to sell his book.
Right.
But he gave out so much interesting, concise information. I mean, it was just, I'm going to tell you, this is going to be one of your best of. I think this one's going to go down in history as one of your best ofs.
Wow, thanks, man.
For the Paranormal Cafe. Yeah, you were asking all the right questions. I mean, nobody had to, believe me, it would have messed everything up. Nobody said, I hope somebody calls in and, they have any questions. I'm like, at least I got to call in just to say, no, stop asking for callers, just talk. Yeah, it's a really good show, man. And his website, I know you've been announcing it, it's Open Your Eyes to 2012andbeyond.com.
Mm-hmm.
Good website. It's funny. It's like while you guys were talking, I'm flipping through the website,
mm-hmm.
and I get to the part where they show like some ancient woodcuts and paintings.
Mm-hmm.
Where some of these painters. I don't know what the dates on some of these paintings are. They got to be they're 600-700 years old.
Right, right.
Yeah, they feature prominently what appears to be a UFO.
Yeah.
I mean, our history, like you said, paintings, tapestries. I mean, they're in India, it's just assumed. It's just, it is.
Right, right.
It's in the Vedas. And it's so funny how we, I guess we're so caught up as a culture in, if you show it to me, I'll believe it.
Yeah, I think that's people say that a lot. It's almost like it's been brainwashed in them. If it taps me on the shoulder, I'll believe it.
But you know what? The funny thing is, like, look at some of these mass UFO sightings over airports, man. Like, it happened in Chicago, like in the Phoenix mm-hmm. Light. You mentioned both of those incidents. These were mass sightings by numerous people, credible individuals. But those who weren't there, it was ultralights with flashlights.
Well, that's what the problem I have with this cynics is, it's one thing to doubt in the face of no proof. Okay, it's one thing to do that, but it's another thing to actively campaign. Like the Joe Nichols of the world, and
I've heard Joe, and he's been on television a lot. He's been on history. I know he's been on your show. I mm-hmm. think I can't remember the last time he was on, but I remember
right.
you interviewed him, and mm-hmm. and you're right. I think skepticism is great. I think if you go out there and you can kind of prove that, hey, what you thought you saw, it either wasn't what you thought it was, or very possibly could have been something else.
Right.
That's great, because you can actually hurt the movement or the industry, whatever you want to call it, the whole paranormal UFO movement in this country. It's trying to gain credibility with the scientific world. You want to really weed out
right.
all the all the I guess the people that are so quick, you know, if you flick a match up in the air and, oh, that was a UFO. But no, it was a match and it's laying on the ground right there. You can tell they just, and I even see different things at different blogs I go to or websites, and it's like, no, you know, there's a big one. There's like a hole in the ground that formed somewhere in New Jersey. They found it. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah, we actually talked about that in the first hour.
I know. I missed that. I was just getting back from work.
Yeah.
What was your perception?
It doesn't look right. It just looks like basically somebody took dirt and threw it around. I hate to say it.
You know what? You know, people were putting out all kind of theories, and I'm on one website in particular, and I'm just like, you know what? From what I can see, it's a hole in the ground.
Yeah, exactly.
In fact, even in a blog, I posted, come on, guys, you don't know what this is from, and I posted a link to the gopher from Caddyshack. It's like, you know, come on, let's get real, man. Nobody saw anything. There's just a hole. It's 18 inches deep by 4 feet wide and dirt all over the place.
Exactly. And that's the way it looks. I mean, it really does look like a... You know, if anything, it looks like somebody's put, like, a stick of dynamite or something, and boom, you know, and...
Kids, like, stringing together a couple M80s or something.
But do you think that's intentional?
Found evidence of that. Somebody else made a good suggestion, or, you know, something more feasible than, you know, whatever, aliens, you know, trying to land and taking off real quick, or whatever.
Exactly.
Is ice coming off of something.
Yeah, or, you know, there's got to be some kind of...
reasonable.
Yeah, it doesn't look like all that much. I mean, I hate to say it because they show a picture of it, but yeah, you're exactly right. It does. It looks like a just somebody made it. You know.
But getting back to the Joe Nickel, I'll give you. I mean, the dude's just a spin doctor. He made a statement. It's the old. It wouldn't be considered gaslighting. It's considered a straw man argument,
mm-hmm.
where you kind of put out a little suggestion. A little tidbit of information that's fact, so quote unquote, it's a fact. Therefore, based on that fact, what you're doing is can't be. His straw man argument is, well, the only reason why people think they see ghosts is because everybody that's ever seen a ghost believes in ghosts. Well, that's BS. How many people have you met that never believed in that stuff? Never, until something happened to them.
It's interesting you say that, because I'm
something places. Undeniable. So, you know, it's not like people that believe in ghosts go out looking for them, therefore they're going to find something that scares them. There's people who have no interest, that don't want, who think it's all hogwash, there's no ghosts, there's no supernatural, there's no paranormal activity.
Yeah,
and something happens to them.
But that by that same logic, doesn't that turn that around? The guy that doesn't believe in ghosts, Joe Nickel, is not going to find ghosts. That's the same logic reversed.
Well, I would also say that if he did have an experience, something akin to what maybe something that happened to me or you, he would. I'm not sure he could write all of them off.
Right.
But he would write it off. He's made up his mind.
Right.
Regardless of the facts.
I think I kind of floored him when I said to him that when he was interviewing him, I said, look, Joe, I really want you to have a experience, not so everybody can stand around pointing at Joe and say, we told you, but for the simple fact that you can experience it yourself.
Yeah.
And I don't even have to know about it. Nobody ever has to know about it. I just like you to have
it. Not to hurt them or to be vindictive, just to say, man, you do have an experience. It opens your eyes.
It changes your whole perception on things.
But here's the thing. In fact, you know, I mean, let's be realistic. We're giving him credibility just by discussing his name.
Well, you know.
But the fact is, he is on television now. He is making a name for himself. But that's just it. He's making a name for himself by being a skeptic. We say cynic because it's really cynic.
Mm-hmm.
But he's the professional skeptic.
But you know what?
He's building a career on that. So I think even if he did kind of have a little inkling, maybe there might be something to this,
mm-hmm.
he can't let that cat out of the bag, because
right.
Then where does he stand?
Well, he's paid by, you know, he makes money being a cynic. And, you know, I got to give him credit on one thing. At least he came on the airwaves where James Randi, he was invited on. This guy can't even return a phone call. So, you know, this is, you know, I called.
James Randi already has the name, and he's a lot older. My guess is, this is my perception of James Randi, is that he just doesn't have time. He's older. I don't think he wants to be in the game anymore. Other than on his own terms, 100%.
Yeah.
Nichols, on the other hand, is still building his name. So he, like, I guess you hate to use the word media whore, but, I mean, let's be realistic. Yeah, if I wanted to be, get some claim to fame and build a career or not, I guess I would be on every stinking show there is, too. But what I also noticed about Nichols is he's looking to be insulted. He made statements. I can't remember specifically what he said, but it was very obvious that he wants people to call him up and be confrontational, not to have a productive debate.
Right.
But I think he really just enjoys, I think he feeds off of that negativity, and he likes to throw the negativity back, and he becomes even more cynical and unreasonable.
Exactly. And you know what? It's interesting you say that, because James Randi has that in him, where it's not even that. I think it's far worse. He just wants to insult people, and that's where
he's confrontational. I've heard him on different things, like older broadcasts and stuff.
Yeah, he just starts insulting people flat out. You know, like somebody was apparently investigating UFOs or something, and he's like, this guy actually says this. He wants to be taken seriously. He actually says, "Oh well, these people need to get a hobby. Go play darts. Go play checkers or something. Go leave us alone." It's like, who the hell are you? Just because you're
who Randi said that. But the funny thing is that's how he makes his career.
Exactly.
So he needs those people. He needs those, as he would say, hobbyless people.
Right.
You know, whatever. You know, he needs that. He knows it. But that's part of his shtick. He's a vaudeville.
It is.
It's a vaudeville act.
It is.
Nichols, he's an interesting guy. He's a pretty bright guy, mm-hmm. My perception of him. And I just feel like, he has to be the cynic now. He doesn't have a choice.
He's backed himself into that corner, I think. He's banked so much on it, and now he even says he gets paid to do what he does.
Well, the funny thing is, the statement I was going to make, and it kind of eluded me for a second, is he and Randi both, it's really bizarre. I think, part of me like wants to think that they do kind of believe that there's something mm-hmm. out there that maybe can't be explained. I think any scientist will tell you science isn't an absolute science. Just about every science is organic. It changes. It grows as new discoveries are made.
Right.
So just to patently say it's not true.
Right.
And they also do that thing. They have that lethal mixture of facts. In other words, you know, there's this group of people who thought this was a UFO or a Bigfoot, and it was proven otherwise definitively, and he's right in
right.
some instances. And they mix those facts with their skewed perception, and it's like, well, if I'm right about A, B, and C, I got to be. That means I'm right about D, E, and F.
Exactly.
So I don't know.
Well, I get a lot of questions about James Randi and his. Doesn't he have something like a $1 million challenge or something like that?
I don't know if that's still in existence.
I think he may have defunded it or just shut it down because nobody ever won it. But people don't seem to bring up about that is if you look at it, everybody seems to want to like, oh, I want to collect James Randi and make me a millionaire and all this kind of stuff. The problem is that James Randi's challenge hinged on one simple fact. You had to be able to control the paranormal. At will.
Right.
I can't control the paranormal. The paranormal, I don't have any control over it. It just happens, and it happens when it wants to happen. I have no influence on it. I'm just an observer in the sense of, just being able to be there when it happens. I can't recreate it. How?
That's like, well, I don't believe in tornadoes. Make one right now. Show me.
Exactly. How am I going to do that?
Create a tornado right now.
They don't even know how tornadoes are made exactly. I mean, they still call it electric theory when you go and learn about electricity. They still call it electric theory.
Right.
How much do you have to say, I can't control the paranormal, James Randi, so I can't make, you know, ghosts appear. I'm not
specifically what he, I'm on his site right now,
mm-hmm.
under under proper observing conditions.
Which are?
Okay, well, that's very subjective. What are they?
Yeah.
Evidence of any paranormal, supernatural, occult power or event. The GREF does not involve itself in a testing procedure other than helping to design the protocol. Okay, so they have a lot of control.
Right.
Approving the conditions under which a test will take place.
Right.
All tests are designed with the participation and approval of the applicant. In most cases, the applicant will be asked to perform a relatively simple preliminary test of the claim, which is, if successful, will be followed by the formal test.
There we go. So they want you to be able to control it. You have to have it under control. That's not proving or disproving the paranormal.
And I think if somebody's claiming they have the ability to perform telekinesis, moving an object with their mind,
right.
I think that's you could create some reasonable parameters there.
Right.
But as far as UFOs, ghosts, you can't. It's like almost an intangible thing.
Well,
I could see how he's a 501c3 corporation. He's a nonprofit.
Interesting.
Well, nonprofit. He's an educational foundation.
Well, nonprofit doesn't mean you don't make money. So.
Oh no! Exactly.
People forget that. Remember the guy? I'm kind of grasping at my memory here, but there was a guy on TV years ago who used to be able to project thoughts. The idea was to project thoughts into a camera. In other words, you could take a sealed.
Well, I remember that guy, and he would take the Eiffel Tower, and it'd be like a blurry picture of the Eiffel Tower.
Exactly, and it was like a sealed camera and everything like that. And he even did it to like one of the studio cameras, like the ones that were on him, and he could like put mind thought into it. And he's running around the studio like a maniac. But if you want, there's video of it. I saw the video years ago. It may be on YouTube or something like that. But
yeah, like he would like go, he would hold the camera and rock, and then like push it in.
Yeah,
he thought into the camera.
Will it into existence. That guy's like a scanner, man. He's going to blow his head off.
That was That's Incredible.
Yeah, which...
Back in the 80s.
Remember that show with Kathy Lee Gifford? No, Kathy Lee Crosby, I'm sorry.
Is that who it was?
Yeah.
Now, who was the other woman on...
That's
Incredible.
There was Fran Tarkington.
Fran Tarkington, right.
And not Frank Gifford. There was somebody else.
I'm going to go online right now. I want to tell you and the listeners.
But they got caught being frauds.
Well, I remember specifically what happened. They showed this it was like a mesh-like material you would put in automobile gas tanks. In the event of a rollover, it would prevent the tank from flipping over, the tank from exploding.
Mm-hmm.
And they said here, and they showed like here's what happens without it. And they had the cars. Well, as it turned out, they had to like roll over all these cars.
Oh, yeah.
Finally get one to catch on fire. And what happened was all the principals on the show invested heavily in this company.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so that,
yeah,
okay.
That Kathy Lee Crosby.
Kathy Lee Crosby.
You're right. And who was the other? I'll get a look at a picture of her.
Hey, what famous quarterback? Here's a trivia question with her. What famous quarterback went out with her and wanted to marry her and she turned down? And almost ended up basically... Not like on the verge of stalking her.
Hold on.
Famous quarterback.
Don't say Joe Namath.
No, you're close though.
I don't know.
Joe Montana.
Joe, get out of here.
Yeah, apparently he was he was really into her, and they dated for a while, but she wouldn't marry him. So.
I'm looking at a picture over here from '84. I'm thinking I'd stalk her too back in the day.
Yeah, exactly. They had a case on there where it was a Toys R Us. Do you remember this? There was a Toys R Us that was supposedly haunted.
Haunted. Yeah. I remember it. Yeah.
And they had video. Okay, they supposedly were filming it in several different ways, like ultraviolet and black light and heat. And they could, in regular sight, they couldn't see anything. But when it was like the heat sensor or something like that, and I'm using the term because it was a different, it wasn't necessarily based on light, you could see a person standing there clearly. Now, whatever happened to that? Because that's not the way it works. If they had the answer back in the 70s, how did that work? I think it was like the 80s, wasn't it? The early 80s?
What all happened again?
They said that there was a Toys R Us that was haunted, which is fine. But then when they supposedly held a seance in this aisle that this person supposedly haunted.
He was kind of standing there leaning with his hands in his pocket.
Yeah, do you remember this? Just like I
do remember that.
Yeah, so they got, whatever happened with that. I mean, come on, if that happened, wouldn't that be like incontrovertible proof? bacterial proof that exists. And also, what the hell happened with, Unsolved Mysteries got caught doing that stuff. It's like, come on, man, you know, when you do that.
Kathy Lee Crosby, you remember this? She had a little role with Dar Robinson, the stunt man.
Okay.
He died in 86, though, performing a stunt.
Really?
Yeah, I think, I'm going online. But he did a stunt where he, like, jumped a car off of a cliff. But he had a parachute on.
I can't imagine him dying from that. What's all that?
Oh, he died from, here it is. He fell without accidentally showing the, that doesn't make sense. It was something to do with the airbag that he fell into.
Oh, okay, so the airbag went out.
Oh, he invented the decelerator cable, a drag line, instead of using an airbag, he would use a drag line. Do you ever see those things, if you go to those rock climbing gyms, mm-hmm. they hook up to a harness, and you know, you'll climb, and if you fall, there's a decelerating cable that's hooked to a device that if you fall, the faster it goes, the more tension it puts.
Yes.
Eventually, so he kind of invented that for stunts.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, we used that at a steel plant I used to work at years ago. We scared the heck out of somebody with that. You could jump off the top with this cable on. You could actually jump off the top of it and decelerate, and it would drop you on the ground, but you would drop where he wouldn't, you know, it would just, and you'd hit the ground. And
oh, here's how he died. He invented that. Yeah. Robinson doing a stunt for the $1 million mystery. Robinson rode his stunt motorcycle past the point of return, straight off a cliff. Oh, man, that's not good.
Oh, he was supposed to go toward the cliff and stop beforehand, and he didn't?
Yeah, right.
Man, that's a hell of a way to go. I mean, it's like evil
Just a little. He went past the point where he was supposed to decelerate and stop, just far enough where it took him all the way off the cliff.
Damn, you think they'd have some kind of, like, added safety on that, but, yeah, I guess he... And that was for the $1 million mystery?
Yeah. I'll rewrite off the Wikipedia here. On November 21st, 86, he was in the set of the film $1 million mystery. After completing the main stunt, the emergency medical staff was dismissed from the set. And while filming a routine high-speed run by the camera, he was just doing blown by the camera real fast.
Mm-hmm.
With a fellow stuntman, Robinson rode his stunt motorcycle past the breaking point of a turn. Oh, I read that wrong. Let me put my glasses on. There, that's better. And straight off of a cliff. Okay, I would like to see footage. I don't want to see the guy die, but I was kind of curious. So, okay, he passed a breaking point of a turn and straight off a cliff. I guess he took a curve too fast.
So, was this like the Columbo stuff? It was Columbo and the murder mysteries?
$1 million mystery. I don't know what the heck I'm...
Because that sounds like something like NBC Movie of the Week or something like that.
I am on Wikipedia, where all knowledge known to man exists.
You know,
let me look at that.
I impressed somebody.
No, it was a film.
Yeah.
It was American film released with a promotional tie-in for Gladlock brand bags.
Oh, that's a bad tie-in. That's a horrible tie-in.
Directed by Richard Fleischer. Tom Bosley, starring role as Sidney Preston, a disgruntled White House aide who took off with $4 million that belonged to the government. That's nothing. Government employees do that every day now.
Every day.
Every hour.
So you're telling me that Fonzie ran off a cliff.
It's Fonzie. You know what's funny? You ever think back when we were kids, the $6 million man? You couldn't get a bionic toe for $6 million now. It's like $6 million. Shit's a deal.
Hey, I love it. I love it, man.
$6 million man off of eBay. It's like, wow, $6 million. It's like nothing.
$16 for those. You know, I always wanted like a $6 million man posable figure, but I never got that as a kid. I wanted like.
My wife had the $6 million man, Starsky and Hutch, and right before I met her, she let her parents sell it all at a yard sale. I'm like, you're kidding me. You had all that cool stuff. It was like in excellent condition.
Hold it. Your wife had this?
Oh, my wife played baseball on a boys' baseball team.
Your wife called in and talked about you earlier. So
nice. Oh, when I wasn't home, great.
I figured I'd get you on for a little while and talk.
At least I have her addicted to the show, too.
Very cool, man.
Yeah, she's snoozing. You know her. She's up at 4:45, so yeah. She's got to be in bed.
Well, she's like the bionic woman herself. So
I'll tell me about it.
Yeah, so, very cool, man.
The bionic temper woman.
Dan. She talked about a 13-year-old kid breaking wind on a school bus.
Was that one of your featured stories?
Yes. Well, we featured a story where a kid got suspended from school. Let me get this story.
Please do.
I actually thought about you talking about this. Let me see if I can find it real quick. Oh, excuse me. Oh, my God. And I had it, and it was... I don't know why I did. I don't know where it went. The story is probably it probably went to the Broadcast Hall of Fame. That's right. Yeah, it's a story about a kid who got suspended in Ohio for breaking wind on a bus. Suspended.
That's one of those you'd have to hear the whole story because I refuse to believe there's some innocent kid just sitting there and he cut one loose by accident.
No, I mean, even if that's hypothetical, I mean,
he had to be, like, standing up and putting his butt in somebody's face.
Did you listen to the show? That's exactly what I said. I was like, that's probably what happened, you know, which is fine, but...
Yeah.
Okay, so it's funny, but they didn't say that. They just said, yeah, he was too flatulent and broke wind while on the bus. And, oh, my God, I can't believe I cannot find this story. This is so, oh, I know where it's at.
Ta-da. I don't know if it's worth finding.
An Ohio 7th grader was suspended last week for doing arguably the most predictable thing a 13-year-old boy could do for a laugh on a school bus. He cut the cheese. The middle school students, Anthony Nichols, they named the kid straight out, too. And another boy lost their bus privileges on Friday for their stinky stunt.
Okay. They were yucking it up and...
Which prompted a customary rousing of laughter and the lowering of windows, according to the Columbus Dispatch.
But you know what, though? That's still no reason to kick it. You know what happened here in Delaware a year ago, or maybe it was a year and a half, 2 years ago.
Go ahead, tell people.
The is it either kindergarten or first grade? It might have been first grade. The kid gets off the bus.
Yeah.
And they have a zero tolerance here in Delaware for threats. If you threaten another child, bullying, it's bullying, that's the big, but it's good, you know, it's good.
Right.
It's really good because it's not fair for a kid to have to go to school with that fear of being bullied.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, so I kind of agree with it, mm-hmm. but you could take it to an extreme.
Yes.
And a kid gets off the bus, by all accounts, he's a good kid. He comes off the bus, goes up to one of the teachers, and he shows them what he had just received, his new Cub Scout penknife.
Yay.
And it is a spoon. And he says, look, I got a new Cub Scout penknife, and there's a spoon in it, and I want to eat my lunch with it.
Yeah.
That was his intent, to show off. He was so proud of his new... They suspended that kid. Well, they tried. There was nationwide outcry. The Christiana School District got bombarded with letters, death threats from all over the country. They let the kid back in. Yeah. And of course, that particular principal or whoever made that decision made some ridiculous comment. Well, you know, you're sending a bad message here because some kids have gotten kicked out of school for bringing knives to school. No, you're going to compare a first grader that's proudly showing his spoon and his Cub Scout penknife that he earned a Cub Scout penknife. He's going to show you the spoon. You're going to compare that to some ninth grader or eighth grader who's, you know, come on, mofo. You know, I hate to say it. That's the exact that they made it. They tried to make it a racial issue because he was a white kid.
Oh.
And they said something to the effect of they had the black kid. Yeah. You know, the black. This, you know, he's a black kid. You know, he would have got kicked. No, that's not what happened.
Right.
And it was a shame. It went in that direction. It was a little boy. I don't give a darn what nationality he is. I don't care if he's big Christian, Indian,
right.
You know, African American, European descent. It doesn't matter.
Right.
you know. But you're going to compare him to some eighth grader who's going to pull a knife on a kid as a means to threaten them?
You know, Pete, I took a knife to school, and it was a big one. It was probably like about 8 inches long.
We all had them. I went to Catholic school. We all had pen knives in our pockets.
This one wasn't a pen knife. This sucker was like a Bowie knife. It was like a military-type knife. I took it to school and showed it to a teacher. The teacher's like, wow, that's pretty big. Gave it back to me, and I went home. I mean, where have we come with that?
I remember like a teacher or a nun occasionally needing a knife and go, can I borrow one of your pen knives, boys? Just because exactly. You know, we all had a pen knife in our pocket. Well, and some of the kids had like 4-inch, 5-inch blades on them.
Well, I was a Cub Scout and a Boy Scout, and we're always taught to be prepared. And the way you be prepared is you carry a pen knife around. It's called being responsible. Yeah, I mean, come on. How stupid are we going to be?
It had the knife, but also had a screwdriver in it. Yeah, I know. Exactly. I've got a couple of them right here on my desk.
Well, you know what's interesting, too, is how about the one kid that went to school and accidentally had a G.I. Joe, one of them little G.I. Joe plastic guns. It's always like 2 inches long. It's a gun that fits in the G.I. Joe's hand. And, you know, he accidentally had that in his pocket. He got suspended for a no tolerance. Zero tolerance.
Yeah, it's pathetic.
Well, zero tolerance means zero intelligence. That's the way it should be.
You know, it's even my son, you know, he's a good kid, man. But, you know, he loves action-adventure movies.
He does.
You know, much to my wife's chagrin, I got him, like, hooked on, you know.
Yeah.
I'll let him watch parts of Terminator. Some of it scares him, so I got, like, cover his own eyes. He knows what to watch and what not to. He gets scared.
Well, did you let him watch the part where the Terminator knocks up a woman that works for him and then has a love child?
No, that's the best part.
That's the point.
We're going to save that for when he gets older. How about that? Hey, more revelations. He had an office building in California that also had bedrooms in it.
That had what?
His bedrooms in it, and some of his staff evidently are now coming out saying, yeah, there's women that would come. He would meet women late at night, and they'd go disappear for a couple of hours. And
ridiculous.
Yeah, this is not true.
It was like a love nest?
We were there talking to you, those state business and all this nonsense.
So it's like it had bedrooms?
That wasn't the love nest. My love nest was at home with Maria and our maid.
Exactly.
Who had the baby and all this nonsense with.
Don't you believe it?
He's lighting up, Arnold.
Exactly.
You already admitted it.
Don't you believe that either?
But you know what? Arnold was quoted.
That's what Americans do.
That's what we do.
Here's my whole thing with politicians. And one thing I liked about Arnold.
Yeah.
He never preached family values.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't. As far as I'm concerned, hey, listen, is it kind of rude and despicable? Yeah, sure, without a doubt.
Right.
But you know what? He's not preaching. He's not giving you – he's not shoving his hypocritical family values down my throat,
right,
or his constituency's throat. So who cares? If that's what he did in his spare time, it's between him and Maria and his children.
That's who I feel bad for. I think
when you cheat on your wife, you cheat on your kids.
Well, you know what's interesting is you saw him during the campaign, and I've seen him with films making public appearances with Maria. Tell me you didn't see the love in her eyes. Tell me you didn't see that, because that woman was really in love with that
guy. Dude, they were together forever. Those two have been, people don't realize, like, way before they got married, they were dating for, like, forever. I don't know. I remember years ago reading a story about them. Like he got in an accident. He rolled a Jeep over.
Yeah.
With her in it.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. So I don't know. I like Arnie and all that kind of stuff. Everybody makes mistakes. There's no. I'm not saying.
That's between him and his wife, man.
Yeah.
That's
really
between
is.
Him and his wife. Now, let's fast forward. He's one of those politicians that preaches family values, but he's, you know, tapping toes in the men's room trying to pick up on a, you know. Trying to get a little, you know, a little gay action. You know, after he just got done preaching hell.
What a cheap shot.
Yeah.
What was that, Arnie?
What a cheap shot.
Hey, listen, Arnie. That's just the way it goes, man. I'm just speaking my mind here. I could be wrong. I often am. My wife will tell you. But
don't be a girly man.
We could have fun all night with this stuff. Oh, God.
Arnold. But, you know, who cares? He's, you know, it's his business. No, honest to God, is it poor judgment? Absolutely. It's poor judgment when you're a nobody, when you're in the public eye like that, and you know that if you get exposed, it's going to be big, it's going to be front page news, and you have children that you're not considering.
Right.
That's just total selfishness.
Right.
But short of that, I don't care.
It's one of those deals. Hey, it was, people make mistakes, and he didn't cheat on me. So what? You know, I mean, I feel bad for Maria. I mean, she had that look. You know what I'm talking about too. A woman.
You know, my impression of her is she would never do something like that. I don't know. I don't know her.
I don't know her at all.
But my God, I mean, she just has, you know. You can say what you want about that family, and I golly knows her. Which one? JFK's dad. What was his name?
Sergeant Snyder or something.
I don't know. That's her father. Yeah, that's her father.
Yeah. I can't remember his name.
But they got a little bit of a past there, man. But you know what? With that being said, she certainly comes across like she's like. That was my impression. She was definitely, but the funny thing is, I always thought he was kind of dedicated to their marriage too. Although you heard over all the years of him hitting on women on different movie sets. Mm-hmm. And
well, he attacked Lonnie Anderson in bed one time when they were making the Jane Mansfield story. He attacked her in bed. And I don't think he was married at the time. So.
Lonnie, come here. You got a big head like a toaster oven. Come here.
Exactly.
With your blonde hair and all this nonsense. Well, I'm going to attack you.
Yeah.
And make love to you.
It's the American dream.
It really is my American dream to make love to Lonnie Anderson.
Exactly.
Come here.
I don't know, man.
Look, I'm making muscles. It turns you on, doesn't it?
I'm flexing while we talk.
I make love to you. I flex.
Yeah. Hey, did you hear about that one time? It's cool that I have time here to talk about this. But did you hear about that one time that he used to go on the Stern show all the time? And I like Howard Stern he's blazed his own trail. He created a genre of radio that is nobody can be able to seem to do it the same way he does.
He's a marketing genius.
Yeah.
I don't care whether you like him or not.
He is a genius.
He's a marketing. He's a stinking radio announcer. Look at the career he built for himself. So.
Oh, tell you something, Robin. This is crazy. he used to have Schwarzenegger on all the time. Well, one day he had Schwarzenegger on, and Schwarzenegger is the governor of California at the time. And he's talking, and he's like, and they're goofing off, you know, and he's goofing with him. He says, hey, Arnold, you know, I'm tired of the moon. You know, the moon makes these women have these cycles and everything like that. And also, it's the tides. You know, you think you could do something about that? Well, if elected governor, what I will do is I will put forth legislation to destroy the moon. I will do it myself if they do not give me the money.
Okay, first of all, you know what? Guess what? That wasn't Arnold.
Exactly.
That was a guy named Josh Robert Thompson.
Exactly. And that's what happened. They went to Arnold for a quote. They're saying, you know, is this becoming of a governor? And he said, that wasn't me. It's like they never let on that it was an imitator. And, you know, just as a joke. And reporters took it as
That dude, for Josh Robert Thompson's like an incredible.
Hey, I got a call up on line two. I'll bring him up. You're up on the Paranormal Cafe.
Hello. Hello.
Hey, what's going on, man? This is Dave.
Yes, this is Dave. I don't know. You're pretty on cool. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Welcome to the Paranormal Cafe, sir.
Yes, it's raining outside.
Oh, that means you know, then you're outside, aren't you?
I'm outside.
Very cool.
You're pretty on cool. I don't know what you're talking about. You can talk about anything else.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll take a 30-second break, and I'll come out and let you in. What do you say?
Oh.
Okay, I'll be right there. Hold on one second.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Give me one second here, Pete. I'm going to run a real quick PSA. You can stay on if you want. Hold on one second.
You're listening to 1520 AM WCAG Westchester. Heard worldwide at WCAG1520.com.
We're back here on the air. Welcome back, Pete. Yeah, man. So, you know, it's a shame that it happened. apparently 10 years ago. Apparently he must have been smitten with some woman that worked with him. You know, things happen, you know. I hate to say it, and I'm not excusing it by any stretch or demeaning it or, you know, trying to belittle it.
Yep.
But you know what I'm saying, though? Maria had that look with Arnold when she would appear somewhere. She had that look. And women get that look like they love that guy. You know what I mean?
Hold on. I know you're going in a certain direction right now.
No. I'm not. I'm really saying, do you know what look I'm talking about? I'm not.
Like, I know exactly what you're saying.
Exactly. She was really.
You can't fake that look.
No, you cannot fake it. And women cannot fake it, I don't think. And it's funny because you don't get that look often. And when you do get that look, you're like, wow, I'm the head cheese. You know what I mean?
It's really like Hillary Clinton looking at Bill.
Exactly.
She's cutting his head off with her eyes.
Yeah, you can't fake that.
Hold on, getting back to the Howard Stern, when that guy Josh Robert Thompson used to go on as Arnold.
Yeah, exactly.
He was.
Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. He was imitating Arnold one time, and I tuned in. I thought it was Arnold. Then he made a cut. They were talking about some woman, and in his best Arnold voice, he goes, "Yeah, I saw her, had my pants down around my ankles." I was like, "There's no way that's Arnold."
Well, I did. It's true.
He did. Well, he did. He actually, I saw him on television. He gave a speech in front of some women's organization.
Yeah.
And he made a joke. And he said, maybe I'll make another movie. I'll call it The Sperminator. And his wife looked at him like, are you kidding me? And she like, you know, she did the laugh, the nervous laugh. You know, everybody in the audience started laughing.
Yeah.
But yeah, he definitely put his foot in his mouth sometime.
Well, she made him credible, I thought, in a lot of ways. I thought the people that left took him more seriously because of her. So, I don't know.
But we thought Arnie all grew all up and became very mature. And
right.
He's still doing the same stuff.
Still doing it.
Some interviewer, he was interviewed years ago for, I forgot which one of the mainstream mags. It wasn't People. It wasn't Vanity Fair, or maybe it was GQ or something. I don't know. I think it was more like a men's magazine.
Right.
And the guy, this is before he was governor, and the guy even said, you know, he was making comments about women. And when they were done the interview, he said, let's go out and, I'm not going to use the words he used, but, you know, let's go out and pick up a couple women. And the guy was like, sure.
Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, the guy is a chick magnet, you know what I mean?
Oh, without a doubt. So, and this is after he was married to Maria, so.
I have Dave here in the studio. I just turned on his microphone. So.
Yes. Finally, I can talk.
Whoa.
Yes.
I just got to adjust levels. I'm fine.
Hello.
Too loud.
Hello.
Okay, now you're good. I think I got the levels right. That's a tricky microphone because you get real, like if I sit back this far, it sounds like I'm across the room, but if I get real close, that's too close, you know.
You got to get right up on those mics, don't you?
Yeah, because it's the clarity of your voice, so.
Well, with Arnold, it's.
With Arnold,
he's, you know. Arnold, then.
You can't adjust it while I have it on because it sounds.
You can't adjust it while it's on.
Oh, you're killing it.
My Uncle Teddy.
Oh, my God.
It's Uncle Teddy.
Oh,
my Uncle Teddy.
Try to guess which 15 minutes is going to get cut from the podcast.
Yeah, this one.
You're too loud into the microphone.
I want to talk about your Mobius hot dog.
No, let's not and say we did.
Let's talk. Yeah, that's the first time I heard about this.
No.
Mobius.
No.
But what kind of bun you put it on?
It was nice of spoken to you, Pete.
Is that a hint?
I'm going to kill you.
Is that a subtle hint? All right, I'm out of here. I'll see you.
I got you, man.
Bye.
Bye. Oh, Pete's a good guy. I like having him on.
Man, you should put Dave back on.
It's hard to
call Dave.
It's hard to monitor you because you get back and then you get right up on it.
Yeah,
and
I want a rocking chair. His rocking chair.
Well, in honor of Pete, you know, I think we should play this. He was talking about the hole in the ground in Jersey that we were talking about. So, and for some reason, it's not even playing. I don't even know what I'm doing here. So,
the hole in the ground in Jersey.
Yeah, we did a story earlier where there was some kind of mysterious hole, but it's
called the well.
No, it was like an explosion or like it looked like maybe a very small meteor hit it. And, maybe it's along that.
A little teeny meteor.
Yeah, so.
Little baby meteor.
Well, yeah. So, hey, there's a couple stories I did want to get to, and if Pete's out there, I was joking. You're more than welcome to call in, dude.
Don't call in.
Let's see. There's a actually, I had everything everywhere because of the interview I did late earlier tonight. Hey, there's a story here, and this probably I really wanted to get to this with Pete on the air, but we'll get to it. Trenton, New Jersey, a classic muscle car stolen from New Jersey's largest city nearly 36 years ago has been recovered on the other side of the country. A Santa Monica, California man bought the 69 Chevy Camaro SS from a seller on eBay in February, but Keith Williams tells the TV station he contacted the California Highway Patrol after certain features of the car didn't match the model. Police discovered the vehicle was stolen from Newark, New Jersey on July 8, 1975. The original owner Janice Malafuki, told the TV station the car was stolen from the post office where her father worked. She can't believe the vehicle was recovered. You're on the Paranormal Cafe.
Okay, I heard you talk about the muscle car thing.
Yeah.
Are you in the middle of that story? You passed that story.
No, I'm actually in the middle of it. Very cool. Malafuki says she.
You want to read that? Do you want to do that story over again so I can catch the whole thing?
Let's see.
For those of us who weren't paying attention the first time,
I owned the car in '76.
Classic muscle car stolen from New Jersey's largest city nearly 36 years ago has been recovered from the other side of the country. A Santa Maria, California man bought the 69 Chevy Camaro SS from a seller on eBay in February, but Keith Williams tells KSBY he contacted the California Highway Patrol after certain features of the car didn't match the model. Police discovered the vehicle was stolen from Newark, New Jersey on July 8, 1975. The original owner, Janice Malafuki, told the TV station the car was stolen from the post office where her father worked. He can't believe.
It's funny. They probably bought that car for about a grand in '74, '75.
Yeah.
Because 69. I remember those days. Man, you can get muscle cars dirt cheap.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Right? You probably got it for a grand, maybe. Now the thing's probably worth about $30,000 because it's probably been like. How much did the guy pay for it? Did he say?
No, it just says Malafuki says she plans to sell the car. Police are tracing the registration in hopes of finding the thief. Good luck. So 36 years afterwards, they find the car.
What color was the car? Because I think I owned that in '76.
Yeah, I think I.
That car was on his last leg.
You don't want to trace any cars that Pete has in currently, you know.
you really, honestly, you never know, man. That could happen to anybody. I'm on the PY Boers Performance Years. It's Pontiac muscle cars. And there's a whole section for stolen cars. People put them out, their description, VIN number, and anything odd or unusual about it. Because, I mean, that's an old trick. You go buy a bombed-out, rusted-out piece of garbage of, like, a 69 Firebird.
Mm-hmm.
And, you live out, you know, like in a rural area. You stick it in your barn somewhere. You take the VIN tag off of it. You get the title. You put it aside. You junk the car. You scrap the pieces for metal. You go out of state, go steal a beautiful, pristine one worth $20,000-$30,000, bring it back to your place, pull off the VIN number, put your VIN numbers on it, you got a title and a VIN number in your hand.
Wow, I didn't even know that.
And a beautifully restored car, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's horrible, but people, I mean.
It happened.
It absolutely happens. That's not that unusual.
Very cool.
I think he knows too much.
Yeah.
Rob, he knows too much.
Listen, I thought about it. Believe me.
Have you seen my old 10-speed I used to have? Somebody took it.
Hey, I tricked it out, man.
Yeah, Steve.
I would expect any calls from California on that one.
No, that's not going to happen. But you know what? That guy could have just kept quiet and said, you know, the last guy that owned it could have just kept quiet and said, hey, yeah, this is it, you know, but. I don't know, man. It's kind of weird. 36 years after the fact. And
what probably happened was the guy probably bought it, and it was probably maybe sold as a Yanko or something, like a unique 69 Camaro, some a Copo, I forgot, Central Office Purchase Order car, a Copo car. I think I have that acronym correct, which would make it more valuable. And let's just say, you know, it's a fully loaded Yanko. It's got air conditioning, power windows. And as he's taking stuff apart and he's looking at it, as good as it looks, hey, wait a minute, this isn't this car did not come with power windows originally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they cut in for the wiring. I'm looking, you know, it's not a four-speed. It was an automatic car, and they converted it over. Somebody misrepresented this car. I just paid a lot of money. I'm going to report it to the police, as you know, for because I'm going to sue this guy, because that's what you got to do.
Right.
If somebody misrepresents a car, if somebody sells you a GTO. Oh yeah, it's a GTO, it's a real GTO. And then, you know, you're a novice at the hobby, you get the car and you realize, no, it is, it's a Le Mans with a GTO hood and a GTO taillights. And, and you might want to report that to the police because you want to have a lawsuit against them. Because, you know, Le Mans, let's say, you know, it's say a 69 or 70 GTO.
That sounds, that sounds like an old trick, though. I mean, it sounds
like a 70 Judge with a 455 might be worth $25,000-$30,000.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a Le Mans that's been cloned out to look like one, it's not worth that much.
Right.
And if somebody sold it to you as such and you get, like, the documentation on it, and you're like, oh, wait a minute, this is just a Le Mans.
Right.
And, you know, and I paid, you know, the GTO Judge price for this thing. You're going to sue the guy.
Yeah, exactly. That happened a lot back in the day. I mean, that really happened that much?
What's that?
The people cloning cars as look like something else?
No, it happens more now, but like you'll see it on eBay. It'll be like, you know, a Trans Am Tribute, a GTO Tribute car.
Oh.
In other words, it's in Le Mans, and they put a GTO hood and some other, you know, the front fascia and the taillights.
Right.
But they sell it as a tribute or a clone.
Right.
It's when the guy tries to sell it as a real GTO, and I've seen guys do this where they put it up as a real GTO, and they list a VIN number, but if you know anything about GTOs in those years, there should be a 4-2 in the VIN number. If there's not, if there's a 3-7,
mm-hmm.
it's a Le Mans, and a lot of these guys don't even know it themselves.
Wow.
They bought it as a GTO, they drove it around for 3 years as a GTO, now they're going to sell it on eBay, they put the VIN number, and a guy like me is like, writing them saying, hey, listen, if that's the right VIN number, that's not a GTO, it's a Le Mans. You know, and they'll send you back, hey, thanks, man. I had no clue. I thought it was a GTO when I bought it.
Yeah.
You know, that stuff like that does happen by accident.
Right. Well, hey, Pete, I appreciate it. We're up against the top of the hour, and we're pretty much done getting out of here, so.